Welcome to the View My Seats podcast with John Lord, a series of conversations on sports and culture with various fans, friends, and media personalities. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or by visiting viewmyseats.com. Thanks for listening. Mark Ulrichsen, artist and baseball fan. Welcome to the View My Seats podcast.
Thanks for calling.
So I loved your illustration in the April 27th issue of the New Yorker magazine. I'm just curious, what was your process like for a drawing such as that, and how much conspiring and co-working do you do with someone like Roger Angel as you're putting that cover together?
Well, unfortunately, I didn't do anything with Roger, so I was pleased to see that he wrote that little blurb on the magazine's website. But basically, the New Yorker knows I love baseball and sports, but in particular baseball. And so typically, once spring training starts, I start to think, oh, I got to submit something to the magazine regarding baseball. Because if they'll do anything about that sport, it would be at the beginning of the season or the postseason, say if the Yankees or Mets were to make it. So in this case, I was just trying to think of ideas that could, you know, revolve around the Yankees and baseball in particular. So I submitted some other ideas about baseball in the snow, or Alex Rodriguez being back on the team, and some generic things of just plays happening. And I just wanted to do that one cover. I just wanted to do something that had a lot of energy and activity with baseball. And it was David Remnick, the editor, who suggested that the Yankees should be the ones having trouble catching the ball. And so I was like, okay, great, then I'll have a Red Sox scoring a run. So I'm a Red Sox fan in the American League.
You're a Red Sox fan living in San Francisco, so that must be somewhat of a conflict of interest.
Well, it's not my American League team. The Giants are my team. I grew up here, but I did go to school 1 year in Massachusetts, and I lived in Boston for a couple of years, and I fell in love with the team in 67 when the Yankees won the Triple Crown, and they could never do it. So, you know, they're the lovable they used to be the lovable underdogs. Now they're like almost like Yankees light with their spending ways. But they've managed to, you know, weather the storms and a pretty good franchise.
Yeah, I have no problem with you being a fan of an American League and National League team. I know some people would say, well, that's not being a true fan, but it's much more fun that way.
Oh, yeah. I don't like interleague play, to be honest. I like having this matchup happen where, you know, the All-Star game, you get to see the other players, and then come the postseason, you know, it means something. So, you know, baseball's diluted itself a little bit in my mind from what it used to be, but still, you know, it's fun to, you know, pull for, you know, Fenway Park and, you know, the uniform of the Red Sox.
How, it's interesting you mentioned how baseball has been diluted. What exactly do you mean by that?
Well, so the whole thing with the interleague play, so that there's an interleague match every day somewhere, or two of them, I guess. I don't, you know, like that. I don't like the DH. I'm more of a purist, and I grew up as a National League fan, having grown up in the Bay Area. The Giants have been my team all my life. So, you know, in that regard, I'd say it's been diluted. And then, you know, also, you know, they're trying to, you know, appeal to a country that keeps getting faster and faster so that, you know, the sport seems too slow for some people. And I don't like the fact that when you go to a ball game, they crank music all the time between innings and you can't even have a conversation with somebody. So I get to be a little bit curmudgeonly sometimes. But, you know, I love the game.
Yeah. Speaking about being a little curmudgeonly, and do you ever, when you're drawing for the New Yorker, do you consider who your audience is when you're putting together a drawing? Do you try to tailor your illustrations for a certain demographic, or do you just draw what you want to draw and hope that as many people like it as possible?
More the latter. I know that they're a sophisticated audience, that they're going to get the humor or the subtleties. And so that, you know, if someone's picking up the New Yorker and seeing the current cover, of course it's the Red Sox are going to be scoring against the Yankees.
Right.
You know, with Chicago White Sox or, you know, Minnesota or something. So, But I don't necessarily tailor it to them. I mean, part of the thing that I have to go to put in my mind is it's their magazine, you know. Why would they want to put something like this on their cover? They've only got, you know, one cover a week, and so I'm sure they've got a lot of choices to make about what they want that cover to be. And so I just try to think, you know, is this something that they might go for? Why would they want to run this? And then sometimes I also, for the New Yorker, for anybody, you get an idea and then you think, do I really want to execute that idea? That's going to be too hard. That's not going to be that much fun. So you might do your own self-editing thinking, that's not something I want to get into, even though I like the idea. It's just too difficult to execute, or it doesn't fit in with my skill set.
This latest cover for the New Yorker wasn't your first cover for the New Yorker, and it wasn't your first cover for the New Yorker depicting baseball or a baseball player. As a self-proclaimed Boston Red Sox and San Francisco Giants fan, how hard was it for you to draw Derek Jeter bowing out last September?
That one I can handle because I do respect Jeter, you know, and I like Bernie Williams. You know, I don't hate them as a whole. They are the evil empire, and I never liked Steinbrenner. And in fact, the first thing I submitted to the New Yorker that ran inside the magazine that wasn't an assignment, they approached me back in 93 and said, you know, we're going to have these standalone pages for artists. So if you have any thoughts about anything, submit ideas. And this was before I started doing covers. And so I thought, okay, well, this is a great opportunity. And, okay, I love baseball. Why don't I do something about baseball? So I ended up doing baseball cards of owners I couldn't stand. So I did a baseball card of Steinbrenner and Jerry Reinsdorf and Marge Schott and Bud Selig when he was still with the Brewers. Because those are people I don't really like. And I thought, oh, good, I'll be able to kind of get my yayas out by, you know, poking fun at these guys. So doing covers about the Yankees is kind of ironic because, but again, it's the New Yorker. It's their magazine, and they're going to do the Yankees more than they're going to do the Mets because the Yankees are winners. And have, you know, a much bigger following, I'm sure, and a greater history. But with the Jeter one, it was great to be able to do something to honor him because I do respect him.
And you would also agree, Mark, that baseball is much, much more interesting when both the Yankees and the Red Sox are playing well.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, I always think that sports in particular always need a team from the New York area to be doing well, just for the sake of the sport, because it's so, you know, everything kind of revolves around Manhattan. And so, you know, I'm glad when they're doing – now, some teams doing good, though. You know, I think James Dolan is just a complete imbecile, and, you know, it's too bad what he's doing with the Knicks, but I'm not going to worry about that.
No, that's not for you to worry about, because you have the Warriors out in the Bay Area, so everything's good in the NBA for you.
Well, for, you know, the Warriors won it 40 years ago, so it's, you know, a long time coming, and they haven't won anything yet. But, yeah, they're an exciting team, and, you know, it's just great to see them play so well and have such great players.
Well, what I loved about this latest cover that you did for The New Yorker is that our mind can wander in so many different directions just by simply looking at this image. And you talked about how you didn't work with Roger Angel on this particular cover, but the words that he uses to summarize the action, you know, are words that would fairly accurately describe what a lot of Yankee fans feel about their team this year. And when you look at your cover, you know, all of us can kind of conjure up these ideas and these descriptors and all these kind of prognosticate the Yankees season because, you know, they're off to somewhat of a rocky start. But I wonder, the power of art and the power of illustration, do you like it when people kind of make their own conclusions about your work? Do you like things to be somewhat open-ended when it comes to your artwork, to not have conclusions, but to let people come to their own conclusions about what you're trying to say?
Definitely. You know, because sometimes people see things that I don't even see.
Yeah, right.
And so you just never know how anybody's going to respond to something. And again, even the creator cannot be aware of something they've done. And that's always kind of a delight when someone points something out. It's like, whoa, I hadn't even considered that. So, yeah, and, you know, for me, what I do, I feel like it's just always variations on a rectangle. You know, I've got a rectangle to work with, and how am I going to organize elements within a rectangle to tell a story or to move your eye around or make a pleasing composition or to have something that's very arresting that will kind of stop you because there's just so much visual energy in the world that it's hard to get somebody's attention these days, especially these days. And thank goodness for the New Yorker that they're still around and they still have covers that don't have, type all over them telling you of 25 hot bathing suits and 52 great beaches to go to or stuff like that that most magazines do these days.
Not yet, at least. So just a quick one last question about this latest cover. Do the Yankees catch this ball?
No, it's going to drop, and Pappy's going to score, and Sandoval's already scored, and it's going to be maybe it's a bases clearing inside the Parker, but I doubt it with Big Poppy.
Yeah.
No, the ball's going to fall. In fact, everybody is slightly away from the ball. No one's going to quite catch it. And I also made it, though it's not supposed to be likenesses of anybody, but I made it the Yankees infield. So it's Chase Headley, Didi Gregorius, Stephen Drew, Brian McCann, and Mark Teixeira all there. So I Googled what their gloves look like and what their shoes look like and how do they wear their uniforms, are the pants like down or up and that kind of stuff. Because I like being accurate without anybody saying, oh, that must be, so-and-so.
Well, I've never seen David Ortiz look so athletic.
True.
I should have been able to tell that you were a Red Sox fan just from his slide.
Yeah, the joy of that slide. And also, Pablo Sandoval kind of burned his bridges when he left here and then dissed the Giants after, all this love affair that the Bay Area has given him over, his career. It's like, geez, what's with him? And I think that's part of the thing I don't like about sports these days is these guys are just pampered and live in this cocoon where, the money they make is, they only compare it to their peers, and it's not compared to, the world at large.
Yeah, it's hard for a lot of us to understand, but we still watch. And if you really wanted to mess with Yankee fans who read The New Yorker, what you should have done is you should have made all of the players in the infield Alex Rodriguez.
True. I could have tried that one, yeah.
That could have been a possible route, but he's off to a great year, and the fans will love him as long as he's playing well. So you are a Giants fan in addition to being a Red Sox fan. You live in San Francisco, and you mentioned Pablo Sandoval, and a lot of your artwork has been dedicated to the Giants' recent success. How hard was it to be a Giants fan up until their recent run of winning these past few years?
Yeah, it's probably like being a fan of, most of the teams in professional sports. You stay with them through thick and thin, and when they're winning, I have to watch every game on TV. And when they're losing, I can watch the first four or five innings until they get blown out, and then I can go out to dinner or do something else. So, but for the most part, I'm not a fair weather fan. To me, baseball, what's so wonderful is it's like a 6-month book that you're reading, and every day is a new chapter, and you never know how it's going to turn out. And then the next day, it's the next chapter. And so I love that whole half a year of, following this team.
As an artist, is it harder to draw things or teams that you care about? Is it easier to draw things that you don't have a specific affinity for? I guess what I'm wondering is it harder for you to draw the Giants than it is other teams because of how you care about the team, or is it easier?
No, I think it's the opposite. It's harder to draw something about something I don't have an opinion about or care about, that's why when I first tried to become an illustrator, I had work that was about the things I cared about. I mean, when I first started trying to be an artist, it's like, is it okay to paint baseball? I mean, is baseball a subject for artists? Is that okay? Because it's something I love. So I want to, render it, and I want to immerse myself in it and get all my books out and do the reference and study, uniforms and players and what have you. And it's much easier if you really care about something. It's much more fun. And then also, I love showing my fandom, my love and appreciation of a certain team through my artwork.
How much of the Giants' success do you think can be attributed to their stadium and this kind of renaissance, this outdoor renaissance that San Francisco is experiencing with that team and that stadium? Because, I've never been fortunate enough to visit the stadium, but by all accounts, it is just a spectacular place to watch a baseball game. A little cold, but a spectacular place to watch a ball game.
Yeah, and it's actually, having grown up here and spent my youth going to Candlestick Park, it's not cold compared to Candlestick.
No? Okay.
Yeah, the stadium has been a big part of the success, and also the fact that Brian Sabian has been the GM for, 18 years until he just got booted upstairs this year. They've had a core group of executives that have been around, whether it's their scouts or their front office, or having, you know, the sense to hire Bruce Bochy. When Bochy got hired, he was like, that boring guy from San Diego? You know, and he turned out to be a great manager, probably going to go into the Hall. And so it's all been a great, pleasant turnaround. And yet, you know, I was there watching in 2002 when, you know, they had the disastrous Game 6 and ended up losing in 7 to the Angels. And it was a little harder to root for the team when it was Barry Bonds and Benito Santiago, and you knew those guys were on steroids. And I'm definitely, again, old school. I don't like the PEDs in the game, and that's why I'll never accept that Hank Aaron isn't the home run champ. You know, to me, Aaron's the home run champ, and Barry Bonds did it with, you know, chemicals. And so it was a little harder to root for the Giants, even though they had success early on at the new stadium, because it wasn't that likable a team. When they started winning in 2010 and onward, it's a really likable team.
Yeah. You mentioned Bochy and Bonds, and just out of curiosity, who do you think has a larger head, Bochy or Bonds?
Well, Bonds' head grew when he was on the juice, and I think he's now slimmed down to human proportions again. Well, Bochy stuck with that size 8 1/4 helmet or whatever it is.
If you've ever drawn Bochy, I wonder if there's room for any other part of his body besides his head.
Yeah. I did put him in that. I sent you that one painting of the 2012 team celebrating.
Yeah.
Bochy's in the middle holding the World Series trophy.
Yeah.
But yeah, he definitely has a huge head.
Yeah. So with Bonds, I wonder how most people in San Francisco, fans of the Giants, regard him today. Are people pretty much, do they still feel as if, you know, he betrayed the team, or are fans appreciative of all that he did and where he brought the Giants as far as exposure goes? Because love him or hate him, Bonds made the team interesting or uninteresting a lot. They played in a lot of playoff games, so as far as exposure goes, the Giants had exposure. Giants fans not care about that. They'd rather just have that era of history wiped off the record books. How do you guys feel about Bonds today?
Well, I can never speak for everybody. I know that among my own friends who I don't share season tickets with or what have you, that were, you know, all this group, there's a lot more Bond supporters than there are people like me. I'm definitely in a minority. I think people still, you know, love what he's done for the team, and some people don't care about steroids. They don't care about the records being, you know, tainted, and I do, but that's me. So I think probably the majority of people still appreciate Bonds, and, you know, one day maybe there's going to be a statue of him, because they have a statue of Mays and McCovey and Marichal at the stadium.
I wonder how much of the new stadium, I guess it's not new anymore, but how much of the stadium can be attributed to Bonds in the era of success that predated this current stadium?
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. I mean, it's the house that Bonds built, just like the Yankee Stadium was Ruth's place. But it, also the Giants, you know, they were on death's door. They were going to move to Tampa Bay. They were going to go somewhere else. They were going to be sold and gone. I remember going to one of the last games at Candlestick. I think it was the end of 92, and they were supposed to move to Tampa Bay until they got saved by a local consortium of, you know, businessmen. So that's great. And then they've been talking, they talked forever about building a new stadium, and they wanted public money. And then the people, including me, voted no. I mean, it's just like, you guys make enough money. You can pay for your own stadium. You don't need to tax us, you know, citizens. And thankfully, it is all privately financed. So it's fantastic. And it's, you know, sometimes there's debates among economists whether or not a new stadium does revitalize the neighborhood or not. But it's transformed that whole part of San Francisco. I mean, it is just booming around the stadium.
Is that right around where the Warriors' new arena is going?
Yep. The Warriors' arena is apparently going to go in what's now an auxiliary parking lot for the Giants.
Oh, so it's right next door.
Yeah.
So if you haven't probably had time yet this year to reflect on the season so far, the Giants are, off to a disappointing start while everyone else in the National League West is performing fairly well. If you were able to take the time today to draw the Giants' 2015 season today, what would that drawing look like?
Pile of shit. I don't know. They are not doing good. They've gotten too sentimental, keeping older pitchers like Ryan Vogelsong and Jake Peavy. They got old, you know. And one of the nice things about the Giants is that they were pretty good at rejuvenating things. And, the jury's out on this guy, Joe Panik, our second baseman, who came up at the midway through last season. They didn't have a second baseman ever since Freddie Sanchez went down after 2010. And then Scudero went down after 2012. So they have bad luck with second basemen coming in and doing good and then being injured. And so, we thought, okay, we got a second baseman. It panics off to a tough start. Brandon Belt, the first baseman, he keeps getting injured and off to a bad start. And, Casey McGee is just a fill-in at third base. And, you don't want a guy like Blanco being a starting outfielder. He's more of a fourth outfielder. So the Giants lost a lot when they got old, and then they lost Sandoval, and they didn't re-sign Mike Morris. So they don't have any power, and their pitching is real suspect. So I just feel like we're in for a real long season, and it's hard to believe these guys are the defending world champs because they're not playing like it at all. They're playing terribly.
Well, but go ahead.
No, I was going to say, but regardless of that, they're my team, and I just hope for the best.
Yeah, well, you also have the perspective of understanding that this is an odd year, and the Giants aren't supposed to win in odd years, right?
Yeah, and another thing that's interesting, and that's just been kind of a quirk and funny, but my wife is not a baseball fan, but she has to live with one, and she does get into the postseason because of the excitement, and we're the house where everybody comes over to watch the postseason games, and at one point against Kansas City, I think it was in the World Series last year, the Giants were winning maybe the second game of the series, and they're winning with lots of runs early. She goes, "Well, I feel bad for Kansas City." It's like, no, never feel bad for the opposition. The Giants could not be in the World Series again for another 40 years. You have no idea what's going to happen. You got to take advantage of it when you're there. And I'm one of those fans who, I want a seven-game series in every sport in every postseason, except when it's my team. And then I just want them to win it, and I don't care how exciting or boring it is. I just want them to win it. But, I'm always pulling for, drama, because that's the great thing that sports gives us, is all this drama. We don't know what the script's going to be.
Your illustrations, your drawings have a very distinct style, and I'm wondering if that style, the Giants team is full of players that are full of really charming idiosyncrasies. You talk about Madison Bumgarner, you talk about Hunter Pence. Those players on the Giants roster seem just like they're perfect subjects for some of your drawings. Have you thought about, when you're doing your work, does it help if the characters themselves are expressive? Does that obviously add to the ease with which you can draw them?
Well, I don't know if it adds to the ease, but it definitely gives me something to work from. And in any portrait of anybody, I'm trying to capture my impression of them somehow. Or maybe it's the public's, connotation of who they are. Like I said, they're a likable team, so it's more fun to paint somebody like a Hunter Pence, who's kind of got those crazy eyeballs. He's like Marty Feldman in right field, and Mad Bum with that slingshot arm delivery he has, and, as big as a country ox. And so, that helps. And a Pablo Sandoval is going to be much more interesting than a Casey McGee, who's kind of a bland, I haven't discerned a personality of that guy yet. So, it's much more fun when there's something there to chew on.
Yeah, which makes your drawing of the Yankees so interesting, because for so long and still today, the Yankees are about the sum of their parts, right? They're not about the individuals. So how do you express individual personality for a team that is not supposed to be about the personality? It's supposed to be about the pinstripes.
Well, that's why I made all those guys kind of generic, even though they're representing, certain players. I do some research on somebody and on their former team, because the Yankees seem to be now a franchise that doesn't develop players, but just brings in other free agents and what have you. I guess they've always been doing that too. No beards, no facial hair, no long hair. They're very corporate, and that's a little bland. I like individuality.
Yeah. Well, certainly the Giants have those individuals, which expressive individuals, which must make the team fun to follow for you for another reason. You're not just interested in baseball, but just looking through some of your catalog, some of your archives, you've done drawings for other sports as well. And one of the sports that continues to pop up, at least one of the events that pops up a lot, is the Masters Golf Tournament. Can you explain your connection to the Masters in golf?
Well, that's all predicated on Golf Digest giving me two of the greatest assignments I've ever had. So Golf Digest sent me to the 2008 Masters, and I got to spend a week there, and they just said go to all the practice rounds and then follow the tournament, and then next year we'll do our Masters preview package, so you've got like almost a year to come up with whatever you want to reflect your experience there. So that's still, to this day, the greatest assignment ever.
Really?
Yeah. They had a house they rented in Augusta for the editors of Golf Digest, and among those people who were at the house for the week was Dan Jenkins, who's the crusty old right-wing, kind of dean of golf writers, and John Feinstein, the NPR commentator, who's the left-wing guy. And so just hearing those guys go back and forth good-naturedly was really fun. And then they brought they always bring a guest writer to work on the issue, and the year I was there, it was Tom Brokaw. So, Tom Brokaw came and hung out at our house a couple of nights, and we all got to pepper him with questions, and that was just outrageous. And then to top that trip off, this is just as an aside, when I was flying back from Atlanta to San Francisco, my seatmate happens to be Hank Greenwald, who was the Giants and the Warriors announcer for 20 years or so. And it's like, I'm sitting next to Hank Greenwald on this flight back after my week of, immersion in golf. I just couldn't believe my good sporting fortune. And then Golf Digest last July sent me, and I brought my wife, who's a photographer, and my daughter. We went to St. Andrews, Scotland. And I went back there, and they said, we're going to have a British Open package because every 5 years the British Open returns to St. Andrews. So that'll be this summer. It'll be at St. Andrews. And they said, just go there like you did for the Masters, except instead of concentrating on the golf itself, since the tournament's not happening, just, give us your impressions of the town, the pubs, the cathedral, the ruins, what it's like walking the golf course on Sunday when it's open to the public. And so as I'm speaking to you now, I've got five more paintings to go on that. So I'm doing eight paintings for St. Andrews, and I also did a sketchbook for their website all about my, experiences visiting Scotland. So that's, why I've done the golf things, and it's just because of Golf Digest gives the best dang assignments out there.
When you were in that house with Brokaw, Jenkins, and Feinstein, I'm wondering if some of the dinner conversations would play out like a presidential debate where you would have Tom Brokaw as the moderator.
Well, when Brokaw was there, it was slightly different. He was there one night and one morning, and when he was there, everybody was peppering him with just throwing out, Vladimir Putin, Richard Nixon, Barack Obama, whoever, just throwing out a name, and he had an anecdote. He wasn't a name dropper, but if he threw out a name, he had a story. So that was tremendous, and he's a huge sports fan, too. So in that regard, it was like that. And then the Feinstein, Jenkins, those guys must know each other forever, and so it's kind of good-natured. But, I didn't have a car when I was there, so I would have to depend on the Golf Digest guys to drive me to the course and back every day. And Dan Jenkins would drive sometimes, and he would drive with the windows rolled up, smoking a cigarette, and I'm not a cigarette smoker, and then he would refuse to put on a seatbelt. So the car would beep the whole time because he just won't wear a seatbelt. He's, it's like, I'm Dan Jenkins, I do what I want. So it was funny being around a crusty old guy like that.
Yeah, I'm wondering, I don't know if you're aware, but Jenkins got in somewhat trouble recently, I think a few months back, when he wrote, I don't know if it was a parody or a satirical account of Tiger Woods writing in a diary. It was kind of like Tiger Woods writing to himself. I think that was it. And he got in somewhat of hot water for not representing Tiger in the fairest of lights. Were you aware of that satire?
No, I'm not aware of that. The Tiger Woods story is, you know, it's like something out of a Greek tragedy. I mean, it's just amazing what he's gone through to be the steely-eyed guy who, you know, could just will his way to victory and scare all the opposition to someone you're almost feeling sorry for.
Yeah.
So that's a real interesting story.
The
But, no, I wasn't aware about with Dan Jenkins, but I'm not surprised.
Not surprised. Yeah, I'm left to wonder now after hearing these anecdotes from you if he was writing this while in a car with the windows up smoking a cigarette.
Could be.
looking at your illustrations from Augusta, it's amazing because you're dealing with a palette of so many different kinds of greens, and I was fortunate enough to be there for some practice rounds last year, and the first thing that you noticed about Augusta National is that there isn't a blade of grass out of place, and that is the hardest thing to explain and express to people who have not been fortunate enough to be there is that everything is aesthetically perfect.
I mean, to me, the fairways were tighter and nicer than any putting green I've ever seen.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just outrageous. I don't think there's a more pristine setting for a major sporting event. I mean, it's just, you're right. And then there's that huge expanse of just open grass right around the first and the ninth or something like that, where it's just giant lawn, you know. It's just, it is amazing. It was one of the great weeks of my life being there.
Did you consider doing anything regarding the patrons and the atmosphere that surrounds the tournament? Because, you know, like you're saying that Golf Digest is sending you to or sent you to St. Andrews to preview the upcoming Open Championship, and you're just looking at kind of the history of the town, not necessarily the golf tournament. But I'm wondering if you thought at all about doing anything about Augusta, the city. I mean, it's an entirely different place. It's almost like the golf course itself is something from a fable. It doesn't feel like real life compared to the rest of that part of Georgia.
Right. Well, that wasn't the assignment. So they just said, you know, we want you to cover the tournament and your impressions of the golf course and the tournament and stuff like that, not the town per se. But I do recall driving in, and it was, you know, all the fast food places piled up on top of each other, and it just looked like the kind of city that you drive through and can't wait to leave. So, you know, and I'd never been to the South before, really, so all that stuff was a new experience. And then also in the course of the week, they have all these events. So there's like the PGA Writers Dinner, and then there was some other kind of dinner, and so there were these events to go to, and that was all fun, too, to just go and hang out with, you know, other people involved in the world of professional golf.
Mark, you've said that was the greatest professional week of your life, but is there one sporting event that you've yet to cover that you would love to cover?
Oh, yeah, I'd love to cover, you know, all kinds of stuff. Basketball, to me, especially now the Warriors are doing good, you know, I've always loved the movement of basketball players and their athleticism. And the thing is, that I didn't care for about basketball is that the drama kind of gets drained in the last 5 minutes because of all the fouling and free throws and timeouts and stuff. And, you know, so you're heading to the finish line and then it's like pause, you know, pause, pause. But yeah, I would love to go to some sort of basketball event or, you know, any kind of major event. I just love the postseason of sports. But my favorite sport in the entire world, even more than baseball, is World Cup soccer. And I just, you know, to me, that the notion of the whole world playing and that you've got, you know, 45 minutes of constant action, whether it's good or bad action, it's constant action. And there's no timeouts, no commercial breaks, you know. I really like soccer.
And as far as athletes go, soccer players are some of the most expressive athletes in the entire world.
Yeah, and then the thing about soccer players and basketball players and to some extent baseball players is that you can tell what they look like. You don't know what a football player really looks like. They're so covered in their uniforms. And it's hard to relate to someone who's, you know, a great athlete who has a giant belly and weighs, you know, twice as much as you. So, yeah, I like the fact that soccer players are individuals and, you know, and they go crazy with their, you know, the way they do their hair these days. You know, it's fun just to even watch their hair. You know, I just like the combination of, like, this baseball ballet cover. Well, soccer has elements of ballet to it as well, where there's constant movement and using your body in all different ways. And then not being able to use your hands, you know, you have to get creative with what you can do with your feet and your body. So I think it's just a great sport.
And it must be also interesting because for a lot of Americans, soccer is somewhat of an unfamiliar entity. So having an opportunity to draw soccer is different than being able to draw baseball and golf, sports that perhaps mainstream America is more familiar with. And I wonder if that you're able to take a little bit more, not creative license with soccer, but because as a lot of people aren't as exposed to soccer as they are other sports, I wonder if that gives you some liberties with your subjects.
Not necessarily. In fact, one nice thing is that ever since '94, when the World Cup was in America, you know, it's become a much more popular sport here all the time. And you know, the U.S. Hiring Klinsmann, that was a sign that they're trying to get to be a little more within the world rankings to rise up. And so I see it as gaining popularity in America, and we also have always been a nation of immigrants, so that you bring people who, it's the world's game, and there's a reason why it's the world's game. All you need is a ball. You don't need to have a stadium. You don't need to have a glove or a basket or, other things like that. It's easy to relate to just finding a ball and kicking the ball. And so I think it's going to grow more and more popular here, and I don't know if MLS will survive or not, but I'm just, encouraged to see more and more people enjoying the game. And, when the World Cup was happening here the last time, San Francisco, they had viewing parties and, down by the city hall where, people could just go and watch, Portugal play Ghana or something. So it's great.
Last thing, and I don't know if you can share with us, but in light of your day and a half with Tom Brokaw, I'm wondering if you could tell us what Mr. Brokaw did in fact say about Vladimir Putin.
Oh, I can't. I don't remember. Sorry. Too long ago. Too many bottles of wine. No, I don't know.
That's okay.
But, he was entertaining and charming and he's like, he's from Central Casting. Yeah, that's the voice of a news anchor.
Yeah.
He seemed like a real person and wasn't so full of himself as I'm sure some people in his position could be.
Well, Mark, we'll have to talk again sometime soon after you pitch the big pile of poop to the New Yorker to describe the San Francisco Giants season.
Yeah, unfortunately. But, it is a long season, but I think it's going to be a long season for the Giants in that, again, the pitching and the hitting both aren't there. And in the past, the pitching kind of carried us, but it's kind of sad to see a guy like Tim Lincecum go from, Cy Young his first few seasons to a guy that, is going to strike out seven guys and walk seven guys and hit three of them and two wild pitches, he's just and give up three-run homers. So it's a little distressing that they, have unraveled the way they have. But, there's always this year.
Yeah.
And then there's always this year.
Well, talk about an athlete whose movements can be described as a symphony. Tim Lincecum.
Yeah. I liken him to like a Ferrari. He's just got too many moving parts. And, he's supercharged and can be fantastic or he can break down. And it's all about his mechanics and stuff.
Well, good luck to your Giants, although as a non-Giants fan, I don't feel too bad for you guys this year.
Yeah, no, I understand.